Shalas Ahom. With the passing of Rav Aaron, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. And the truth is, you know, Rav Aaron was very, very meticulous in everything he did. And because he was so meticulous and thought out in everything he did, I felt it would be inappropriate for me to get up here and eulogize, give Divrei Hespet, although again, now we're in ER, in theory you could. But without writing and rewriting and thinking and rethinking everything that I would like to share with you about Rav Aaron, I just couldn't, I didn't feel I could put it together in such short notice. I'm very flustered today. I've cried a lot. I've tried to learn harder, and then at the same time I thought maybe I shouldn't be learning, maybe I should just be staring at the wall, Yoshev Domem. I've gone through a gamut of emotions today and reactions. And because of that, the truth is, and I'm thankful Rav Waxman didn't call, I'm very, very glad, or at least thankful, that I'm here today, presently. When Avraham Avinu was told, Lech lecha me'artzecha mimulatcha me'beis avicha latz asharerak, God says, go. When you get there, I'll tell you, that's the place. But there was no Amud Anan that was directing him, or Amud Esh. How did he know where to go? Which should he go? East, west, north, south? So Avraham Avinu walked towards Eretz Yisrael, walked towards Eretz Canaan, not for any particular reason, just because he was so confused, and he figured if I'm confused and I don't know where to go, I should go to the place where it all started. And man was created from the afar of Eretz Yisrael. He says, I'll go back to the beginning and we'll try to work it out from there. I'm confused today. I'm flustered. And I'm thankful that I'm back at my, at least, my beginning. This is my home. Yerubim are my parents. I don't do the greatest job of kibud av v'em, to be honest, but I certainly do feel it, and I'm just thankful that at least I can be back at the beginning today. Hopefully get some clarity on, you know, how to react and what to do from here on in. But as I said, I don't feel comfortable discussing the great tragedy that befell us today. I want to talk to you about a happy thing that's coming up in a few days. I want to talk to you about Yom HaTzmaut and the return of the Am Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael. I'm not enjoying the fact that I'm like distant from it. Okay. Very good. It is what it is. You know, for two millennia, the Jewish people, we lived in the exile. We lived in Galut. Galus. We're Galustic Jews, as you say. There is, the Jewish people are smart, and necessity is the mother of invention, and thankfully we concocted ways and devised ways to not only survive while we were in Galus, but thrive as well, and grow, and, you know, remain connected to our Torah and remain connected to Dvar Hashem, and that's a wonderful and good thing. Even in Galus, we managed to do that. However, one cannot deny the fact that when he is in an environment, that environment impacts him. It's an undeniable fact. No matter where you will be somewhat influenced by the place that you are. Chazal say it, Rishonim say it, Achronim say it, psychologists say it, anyone will agree to that simple fact. The environment that you're in some way, shape, or form impacts you. And so therefore, when the Jewish people have spent 2,000 years in Galus, that has had an impact on us. Certain streams have crept into our personality that are not necessarily authentic and indigenous to being a Yehudi. There are certain things that are not genuine in our service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and in our Hilchos Deus places that simply as a ramification of being in Galut for so long, we just changed a little bit. And it's hard for us to know and to distinguish what is authentic and what isn't. Right, if you think, how many people in this room know which part of the White House are authentic, the original, and which has been added on? Right. Yeah, most people know, yeah, the West Wing is new, East Wing is new, but you know, were those columns original or not? Does anyone know? I don't. I think not. I don't know. I think they used to hide a stable at some point. Somebody, whatever it is. We don't know. It's been that way for so long, right? Or somebody that dyes his hair numerous times over, right? One time this way. You just don't know anymore what's his original hair color. Just don't know. The Jews in Galut have a lot of authenticity to them, but there are a lot of streams that are not necessarily part of our root and core personality. And that's what happens over the course of 2,000 years in Galut. And one of the things that we have to try to do now, as Baruch Hashem, we've been zocha to come back to Eretz Yisrael, and we have Medinat Yisrael, we have to try to distinguish and differentiate and figure out what's genuine and what's not. So that's what I'd like to spend some time doing. Not with any ideas of my own, with ideas of Rav Kook. Now, I want you to know, if you've heard the word Rav Kook and you're like, uh-oh, I want you to know, I learned in this very place, and as I told you, I came back and I'm thankful to be back. I've actually been there for about 2 hours already, Rav Waxman, today. I was sitting in the old basement in my makom. The basement used to be the octagon that's down there. I was learning a little bit. I was tempted to take off the globes that sit on top of the light bulbs because we used to play football also. I shouldn't tell you, but we did. It was late at night. Only if you're zochet to be here at like 3 o'clock in the morning can you get away with this. So we used to... So when I was learning in that space, in that basement, just you know, there were oftentimes Israelis that had what was called Shas HaLavan in their makom, which is the Orot books of Rav Kook. And I one time tried to open, more than once, I tried to open them up, I would read a line or two, and I'd be totally, that's like the great divide between Israelis and Americans, like trying to understand Rav Kook, that and going to a mechanic, which I did yesterday. No matter how Israeli I feel in the authentic, and I'm like, Gever Makore Achei Ma. He right away is like, you want me to speak English to you? I was like, yeah. But anyway, but I found Cliff Notes to Rav Kook. There is a book called Ma'amrei HaRa'aya. It's a little bit easier to digest. It's like a little bit Einaya. Those of you that are familiar with Einaya, it's a little bit easier to read. It's Rav Kook when he was like 17, 18 years old and he was writing on the Gata, so it's a little bit easier than a rote. So Ma'amrei HaRa'aya is not when he was 17, 18, but Chas Dei Hashem, it was articles that he wrote. And I guess more for the masses than, so therefore, it's a little bit more understandable. So I'm going to, right, please don't mistake and think that this guy is the Rav Kook guy. I wish I could be a Rav Kook guy, but I'm not. I use the Cliff Notes. So I recommend the Cliff Notes by Ma'amrei HaRa'aya. Excellent, excellent. Okay. So Rav Kook says the following. Yeah, anyway, how many people like the month of Nisan? What are some things you like about the month of Nisan? What?
No
tachanun. No tachanun. You like that, right? A lot of people do. A lot of people are ashamed to admit it. Thank you very much for your honesty. There is actually a Shabbos journal in Israel called Karov Alecha, where somebody wrote to Rav Yehoshua Shapiro Rosh Yeshiva of Ramat Gan, and he asked him, you know, I feel a little bit bad. I actually enjoy the fact that there's no tachanun in the month of Nisan. Like, is that a bad thing? So he said, no, it's not a bad thing. Because you have to understand that there are certain times that your service of Hashem is through Tachanun, and there are certain times that your service of Hashem is through no Tachanun. And, you know, when the answer is no Tachanun, then you should be rejoicing that it's no Tachanun. And when there is Tachanun, you should be rejoicing that there is Tachanun. So I'm assuming that tomorrow you'll be ecstatic to say, you know, Vayomer David El Gad, Tzali Me'od. This past month you were ecstatic to say, Iskada Ve'iskadash, you know? Good. Why don't we say Tachanun in the month of Nisan? Anyone know? No. Let's see, tuition dollars at work. Korban Nesim, good.
Most of the days,
so together, coupled with the Korban Nesim, okay, very good. Which you don't have by Sukkot. Sukkot, you just have 8 days on Tishrei, and Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur, but it doesn't, okay. Korban and Nesim is one possibility. There is another less known possibility. Gemara and Menachos, Samechei? I'm about to tell it to you. Those big, big fights between the Tzdukim and Baitasim, and the Prushim, the rabbis. And the fights were settled during the month of Nisan. From the first day of Nisan through the seventh day of Nisan, we celebrate the fact that the Korban Tamid victory was won by the Prushim. And from the eighth day through the end of the Chag, we celebrate the fact that the Shavuos victory was won. What's the Korban Tamid victory? So the Korban Tamid victory is the following. The Korban Tamid comes from public funds. It has to come from the funds that are the kupa, the klal kupa. The Tzdukim thought, I don't think so. It says that the kevesachat ta'aseh, it uses Lashon Singer. An individual, if he so is inclined, he can't say, you know what, today, Korban Tamid is on me. I'm going to pay for it. Forget about it. Don't take it out of the public funds. I'm going to volunteer the Korban Tamid today. Can a Yachid choose to volunteer the Korban Tamid? The Tzdukim thought, for sure, it says ta'aseh. And the Purushim said, absolutely not. They actually found the pasuk to support them as well. And they said that it can only come from the public funds. It's argument number one. We'll discuss them in a second. Argument number two was regarding Shavuos. This one's a little bit more famous. Mimachras HaShabbat. Mimachras HaShabbas. Mimachras Macharat HaShabbat. So what did the Baal Tosim believe? Oh, that when do you start to count Sfirat HaOmer? From Motzei Shabbos Bereishis. Not, right? Not the day after Pesach. The day after, and why did they do this? It always had to start on Sunday. They had an agenda in mind. Okay, well, let's first get to it. And the Purushim believed that Makan HaShabbat, what does Shabbat mean? Pesach. The day after Pesach, we call Pesach Shabbat. The day after Pesach, we start to count the Omer. What was the Baal Tos belief? The Baal Tosim said the following. If you believe that Makan HaShabbat means the day after Pesach, then sometimes you'll have a situation where you're cutting the Omer on Shabbos. And how could it be that you're going to cut the Omer on Shabbos? But if you say that Machar HaShabbat means the day after Shabbos, then you're always cutting the Omer on Sunday, and you're always celebrating Shavuos on Sunday. Those were the two arguments. And the Purushim one. Rav Kook explains what these two arguments are about. Okay? Let's take one at a time. The Yachid brings a Korban Tamid. What's that all about? The Tzdukim had a Galut mentality. This Am Mefuzar Umefurad type of belief. That in order to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as a Tzibur, as a whole, it's not something that is for the masses. Right? It's a very, very, you know, It's a Christian thing, that the keys to religion are with the priest. You say your confession to the priest, right? And he holds the key to your... It's not for the masses. Only individuals can connect and really be fully with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but as a mass scale, no way. And Chazal say, Adarab, it's just the opposite. To truly connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it has to be... At Sibur is not just 10 individuals together. At Sibur is a new entity. It's a different type of. It's a juggernaut. It's a powerhouse. It's not something like individual. It's not 10 individuals that happen to be in a group. They take on a new dimension. Rabbi Wein tells a story when he was one time in the Grush Tibol. Everyone dive into the Grush Tibol every once in a while. You're in Yerushalayim. You need a minion. You know, Shari Chesed. You go to the Grush Tibol. He was one time there for a marid late at night. He got into the room. And there were 8 people in the room, 9 people in the room. You come around. So what do you do when you're waiting for a minion? You flip through the whatever Chumash is on the place, okay? Flipping through, or... But he gets... Then he begins to look around the room, and he notices that in the front of the room, one of the people waiting for the minion is none other than Gadol Hador Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Rebbe, by the way, one of the 4 influence personalities under Aaron Lichtenstein. He's in the room. And then Rebbe Wein begins to reflect, and he says the following. He says, wow, this is amazing. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach knows more Torah, he has in his hand more Torah than all 8 other people sitting in the room combined. He does. And he has more good deeds in his back pocket than all the people in this room combined. Shlomo Zalman Orbach was a gadol of unimaginable proportions. Before the times of mass media, and Facebook and internet, etc. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had the streets of Yerushalayim from Shaarei Chesed through the Tachanah Merkazi, 300,000 people. That's in a certain scale much, again, we're not comparing the Golem, and it's not, but that's more impressive than Rav Avadi Yosef's million on a certain level. In the days before mass media, this guy, Rav Shlomo Zalman, is a gadol beyond. I could come here, does Rav Chanoch Zalman sometimes come, does he come and tell his Rav Shlomo Zalman story? No. He should. Or you should read the book, From Jerusalem, His Word. It looks like a children's book. It's not. It's a must read for everyone. Ma'amre ha-ra'ya, when you're feeling... From Jerusalem, His Word. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is in the room with us, and he can't daven. And then Rebbe Wan takes it a step further, and he says, the next person to walk in through this door could be somebody who is entirely unaffiliated, who's never opened up a Tanakh in his life, much less a Gemara, who doesn't know anything. At that time, there was a mass immigration from the former Soviet Union. There were a lot of totally uneducated Jews that were coming. You know, it could have been the guy that says, Barku et Hashem HaMevorak, one of those could have come in. And he counts as much as if Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Because they're not 10 individuals. They're a powerhouse. It's not... He can't do it on his own. A Yachid has no... He doesn't have the access to a Kadosh Baruch Hu that a Tzibur does. He doesn't. A lot of times, it's hard for me to explain, a lot of times, Talmidim come to me and they say, yeah, I understand the value of Tefillah. I just don't understand the value of Tefillah and Minyan. But Tzibur, like what? But, you know, so you'll tell them this idea, but it's so important. He knows that I very much like him. Thank you very much. It's hard to... Does anyone want? Tell you the thing is, it's like always that awkward thing, like, oh, now you have a drink and you didn't say shahakal yet, so now you're going to say shahakal in the middle of the shir, and then everyone's off. So I'll wait till after, and then I'll drink. Okay. It's different. It's different. The 10 individuals are not 10 individuals. They're at Seabor. So sometimes I try to tell them, you know, what's the point of davening with the minion? Why don't I just daven on my own? I try to tell them this point. But there's a difference between telling the point and believing the point. And on the first 8 days of Nisan, the point was proven and everyone felt it. Everyone knew in those 8 days that a Tzibur is different than 10 individuals. It's not just Yachid, Yachid, Yachid. It's the Korban Tumid as a Tzibur, and as a Tzibur we're strong. In Gullus for 2,000 years, we were described as an Am Mefuzar, Umeforad. There was community here, community there. The people in Ashkenaz were coming up with their own sets of chumras, while their free brother in Edot HaMizrach were chewing on kidney oat and having a Pesach like it should be celebrated. There was Pirud, there was, I can serve God my way, you serve God your way. Sometimes I have deep feelings that I want to be Sephardi, but not for the kidney oat, by the way, for the Birkas HaMazon. They have a beautiful Edot HaMizrach, Birkas HaMazon, and the Rachamans are much, much better. Okay, but again, there was Pirud, there was each person serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu in his own way, and again, everything in moderation. Of course, on the Choshen, there were 12 stones and 12 Shvatim, and each one comes to a Kadosh Baruch Hu his own way, but they came on the same, they were all in the same Choshen, they were all there. They were all on the Yafod of Aaron HaKohen together. And Gullus was, I could do it on my own, I'll be in this community, you be in that community, and you know, we'll all serve God on our own. That's a stream that's far into authentic Judaism. And we're back now in Eretz Yisrael. And we have to come together. We have to join again this national movement of being together. Am Echad, not Mefuzar and Mefurad. Ke'ish Echad, Belev Echad, Am Echad. That's all we need. Without the Mefuzar and Mefurad. It's easy to say. It's hard to do. Somebody once told me, I just can't resist. I'm sorry. Thank you for making it less awkward than it had to be. I am a lefty, by the way, that's why. There's a story I once heard about Rav Shlomo Kalbach when he was doing concerts. So one time he got up and he said in this concert, who wants world peace? Who wants world peace? Sing it, brother, world peace. Avinu Shalom Aleichem. I want world peace. Everyone's saying they want world peace. And he said, who wants world peace? And everyone's chanting, peace, peace, peace. He says, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take your arms and put them around the person next to you. And the whole crowd's like, you know, suddenly the music stops, they're like, what? And he explained, world peace is not that I want some people in Somalia to get along with each other that have nothing to do with me. It's not that I want, you know, it's not that I want Syrians and Syrians, it's not that I want them to get along. It's that world peace starts with me getting along with my neighbor that left debris from his construction outside his front door. World peace, Maisa Shahaya Kahaya. World peace is about you being tolerant of your roommate when he leaves his socks on the floor, or, you know, not just being tolerant, but picking it up for him and helping him, putting it in the laundry basket or whatever. World peace is learning how to get along with each other, and from there, it will spread out. This is authentic Judaism. To think that I can do it on my own, and yeah, we'll all be here in the space medrash, but not really together. Zelozeh. You have to be together, echad. And that's a whole different vehicle for connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a whole different vehicle. I'll say it just because I can't resist. Rav Naftalmi Rupshitz, when he learned to read, so he learned Aleph, Kumetz Aleph A, Pasach Aleph Ba, Kumetz Aleph, etc. Kumetz Beis Ba, thank you. I have to go over that lesson myself. Anyway, he was a little bit jumping all over the place. And so he looked at the Yud, and he's like, what's that little dot on the page? So funny. So the Rebbe told him, that's not a dot, that's a Yud. And Yud is the most important letter in the Aleph base. You know why? Because when you take a Yid in the Yid, Tzve Yidin, you get the pun over there, Tzve Yidin, you get Shechina, Shem Hashem. So he's like, it's awesome. And they finish learning. And then they start to learn Vayikra. Because when you first learn, this is great that the Sefer is there. When you first learn Chumash, so you start with Sefer Vayikra. Vayikra Moshe Vaydaber Hashem Alav Mo'ol Mo'ed Le'mor Hashem. That's how Naftali is reading it in Shir. Daber Abnei Yisrael Ma'amatalim Adam Ki Yekid Mikhem Kurban Hashem Min HaBeimah Min HaBakar Min HaTzom Tekrivot Korban Chem Hashem. Im Olah Korbanah Min HaBakar Zechat Amin Mekriven Al Vedach Lifnei Hashem Hashem. So the Rebbe finally stops and says, Naftali, why do you keep on saying Hashem? He says, what do you mean? Two dots. Every Sof Pasuk, he was reading as Hashem. So the Rebbe said, Naftali. Only when the Tzvei Yidin are Tzuzamin, side by side, only that Shem Hashem. When it's one on top of the other, combat, fights, trying to be with that, only together can you have Shem Hashem. That's genuine Klal Yisrael belief. Not the galus mefuzar mufurad. We cannot do it on its own. Second fight that took place during these days is the fight over the korban haomer. Okay, mimachar haShabbat. Now, do you suppose that the tzdukim were any more righteous than the Purushim? They cared more about Shmiras Shabbos than the Jewish people. Ask Rav Kook. Is that what we can't possibly be mechal al Shabbos? Is that what this is about? So no, it's not. What is it about? Rav Kook says the following. Rav Kook says, the Baitusim couldn't imagine that there could be chaklaut, toil of the land, that could be sanctified. They could not believe that working the land in any way, shape, or form could possibly be davar shebekdusha. Could possibly be, now and again, to farm during the week is mutar, and to farm on Shabbos is absolutely usur. And that's true, and that's undisputable. But the fact that there is a possibility of sanctifying that work, and when in the context of a korban, that it could even be done on Shabbat, they couldn't fathom it. They couldn't fathom that something that seems so mundane can be so holy. Couldn't be, according to the Baitusim. And come along the Purushim and they say, that's not true. Being a contributing member of Klal Yisrael, and not just in the, even in the chaklaut, in the getting your hands dirty, is part of genuine, authentic Yiddishkeit. it's not just being, you know, it's not just sitting and learning all day. It is also that's part of authentic Yiddishkeit. Right. It's hard for us to sometimes, that's a gullus mentality, right? To believe that anything which is physical is profane and cannot be sacred is a gullus mentality, right? Again, I don't want to pick another religion, so I'm not, but again, the notion of a priest never marrying, and the notion that you should fast. And fast repeatedly. In Yiddishkeit, we don't love fast. Certainly not since the Baal Shem Tov. But even before the days of the Baal Shem Tov, the fact that those ideas developed in Yiddishkeit are sediment of Golos. They weren't authentic Judaism. There's a maisa that somebody once came to the Kotzker, I believe it was. And he told the Kotzker, Rebbe, I've taken it upon myself to only eat oats and I roll around in the snow, sigufim, I sometimes punish myself, and I even beat myself sometimes with my belt or a gartel or a whip, whatever it is. And he's all proud, and he tells this to the Kotzker, and the Kotzker says, So I want to show you something, and he looks outside on the street. The street in those days didn't have cars, they had horses. He says, look at that horse over there. He only eats oats, he sometimes rolls around in the snow, and he gets beaten. But he's still a horse. The definition of an Eved Hashem is not a person that shuns and runs away from the physical universe. Adarava, fakirat, it's a person that learns how to engage it, a person that learns how to embrace it in moderation and work with it. There is a former basketball player when I was in high school, he was the great white hope of Israel. His name was Daron Sheffer. Daron Sheffer played for UConn, and he had, hopefully, you've heard of him? Oh, great! So he had a possible prospect of the NBA. Today he's a Kollel cool guy learning in Meron. If you go to Meron, and Lag BaOmer will probably be hard to find him amongst the throngs of people there. But if you go on a quiet day, then you'll find him there learning in the Kollel cool on top of Meron. So Daron Sheffer was there. It's a fascinating story about his road from UConn to Meron. It's not an off-traveled road. And tell me if he said the same thing in NC So I Called. But he said that, and this is famous, but the first time I heard it happens to have been from him. I wasn't just trying to hook you by mentioning Daron Sheffer, because nobody's ever heard of Daron Sheffer, except for you. He was a great basketball, he still is a great basketball player. Anyway, so he said, the word ma'achal is in fact Rashei Tevot. It's an acronym. Ma'achal, which means food, he says is the following. Matai, when, eich, how, kama, how much, and lama, and why are you eating? If you can answer those four questions, when are you eating? Right? Are you eating when you're hungry and you need to, or are you just eating because somebody walked in with a bottle of Coke and put it in front of you and you couldn't resist? In my defense, I was looking for a water fountain before. So. But I'm not at this level. When are you eating? Right? Eich, how are you eating? Is there a good bracha before? Is there a meal that is infused with divrei Torah? Is there an appreciation of the food that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Stories told about Rav Avigdor Miller, before he would eat an apple, before he would even make the bracha, he'd look at it and he'd say, ah, look at this. Look at this. Beautiful, shiny, red, thin layer of protection that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides for the apple, so that it doesn't, making it waterproof, so that it's not destroyed by the rain. And the scintillating smell that begins my digestive process in my mouth before I even have it. And the color that makes it, nechmad lamar, that makes it so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how wonderful, right? Wow. Eich. Kama, how much? How much are you going to eat? Right. Are you going to, you know, is every night an all-you-can-eat buffet? Or is it moderation? I'm no longer full. No. Somebody once told me that there's a diet out there in the world. This is what they advertise. You can eat whatever you want as long as you only eat when you're hungry. And imagine you have like a huge piece of steak in front of you and you order the 250 grams, they got enough, that's so big or not, maybe, I don't know, sounds pretty big, right? You order 300 grams, 500, whatever it is, and you ate about half of it, and now you know, I'm not hungry anymore. Can you imagine stopping at that point? They claim that if you do, you will never have to diet. Anyway, I don't know, but that's the how much are you eating, right? Comma, and the last one is lama, why are you eating? You can be stronger, you can, you know, so you can, it's because there's a taiva, because it's, you know. There is kedusha in the physical universe as well. Chaklaud is not a dirty word. It's a very nice thing. It's a very nice thing to be involved. It used to be a long time ago that Sochnei Aliyah, the people that were preaching Aliyah, told you Aliyah, Aliyah, Aliyah. And it wasn't always so successful. And the reason why it wasn't so successful is because they never told you that there should be a next stage afterwards, engaging and integrating into the Israeli society. One of the things that Nefesh B'Nefesh does and does well is that they also tell you the day after Aliyah, we want you to become involved in this. That's part of our national fervor, to be involved, not to just be here and do nothing. That's not a knock on Kollel. I don't believe that people that are sitting in Kollel are doing nothing. So, I do believe that the number should be more mitzumtzam, but okay. That's authentic Judaism. At Sibor, and being involved in the development of the land. So today, Chaklaud is less so, but there's many, many avenues that you guys should reflect upon during this week of Yom HaAtzmaut, of ways that you can get involved, right? How you're going to become more together, and how you can contribute. So, and some people are capable of being great contributors to the state of Israel in the Torah learning, and some are capable of being great contributors to the state of Israel not through the Torah learning, at least not full-time Torah learning. You'll have there's a lot of graduates of Shalavim living in my neighborhood, in Ramat Shiloh and Ramat Beit Shemesh, and it's a wonderful thing. Just today, I spent half the day, I see Daniel Chambre sitting in our basement just learning, and he's working, and it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing, and he's doing a lot for, and many others in the neighborhood. You should really bring them here, like do they come, Weichholz and Chambre and all those people. Great, wonderful. And if we're already, you know, 5 years ago, I think it was, I'll end with this, 5 years ago, there was an Hey Tishrei, there was a great giant loss to the Dati Lumi world. His name was Rav Hanan Porat. Rav Hanan Porat was a legend in the Dati Lumi world. He was a Talmid Chacham, he was a philosopher, he was a poet, he was an activist, he was everything. Just unbelievable. He is one of the people most directly responsible for Hid Yashvud in Yehuda v'Shomron. Right? He started settlements, many, many settlements in Yehuda v'Shomron. He was a father figure to Gush Emunim. Just unbelievable. And all powered by conviction. He was a great, great Talmud of Rav Tzvi Yehuda. Wonderful, wonderful personality. He died at the age of 67 of cancer, unfortunately. A few months before he passed away, they had an interview with him on television. And the interviewer asked him, "Are you afraid to die? Afraid to die?" And again, at this point, you have to understand, I don't know how many of you have seen this picture, but Rav Hanan Porat, the most famous picture, I think, of Rav Hanan Porat, is on a person's shoulders in which yeshuv was it? It might be in Hebron. On the person's shoulders with his hands wide open, maybe some see Hebron. Blurid, you know, like the big poof that every Dati Lumi has got, you know, with the kippah on the side. So, a tank of a person. He was also one of the people that stormed through to the Harabayit Beyadenu. He was there. And he was like a fragment of that, sitting frail in the chair, you know, with his face slightly deformed, and, you know, a shadow of himself. And he asks him, "Are you afraid to die?" And Rav Chanan Porat says, without batting an eyelash, with that, no. Because I know that death is not the end game. It's a ma'avar, it's the next step. There is nitzchiut, right? He says, the Jewish people are back in their homeland. It's Tchias HaMeisim. Who would have believed it? Who would have believed it? The Jewish, right? Says, somebody was telling me they were in Har Nof, and the wonderful things about it, right? He was by the tomatoes at Har Nof, in the fruits and vegetables section. Rabbi Gold is his name. Rabbi Gold was there, and it's a story he likes to tell often. Somebody came to him and recognized him and said, are you that rabbi that speaks about how wonderful it is that we have a Medina? Yes. He says, yes, I am. I think it is a wonderful thing that we have a Medina. So he says, really? You think it's a wonderful thing? So Rabbi Gold turns and says, have you no shame in front of these tomatoes to speak that way? And what does the Navi Yechezkel say? Right, it's actually Gemara in Megillah. Also, why is it that we have the bracha of Kibbutz Galios right after Berkas Hashanim? Because the Kibbutz Galios is going to happen after the land begins to give its fruit. For 2,000 years, Eretz Yisrael was a desert. You could see these pictures. You can go online and type in, you know, desolate Eretz Yisrael, and they show these pictures in the same place. We have tomatoes in Israel. We invented cherry tomatoes in Israel. Did you guys know that we invented cherry tomatoes? There is 9 different types of cherry tomatoes, by the way. Not just one. It's not just one. 9 different. And we invented all of them. We cornered the market on cherry tomatoes. Have you no shame in front of these tomatoes to say that this is not the Jewish people returning to their own land? That this is not. There's nitzchiut on Israel. Tchias HaMeisim. Who would have thought the tomatoes would sprout again? We have an army, Baruch Hashem, an army. What do we want? There's a medrash. Another medrash says, there's 4 kings. David HaMelech, Asa, Yehoshaphat, and Chizkiyahu. When David HaMelech says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen, God, Ardofai vai vasigem, velo ashuvat kalotam. I'm going to chase my enemies, and I'm going to reach them, and I'm not going to come back until I obliterate them. And then Asa is like, all right, listen, God, Ardofai sig, I'll chase them, but I don't think I can actually pull the trigger. Can you do that for me? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yeah, I'll do that. And then Yehoshaphat says, whew, it's hot outside to run around in this armor. It's heavy. Why don't I just stay here and I'll sing to you and I'll praise you and you take care of business. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fine. And then Chizkiyahu says, I don't even think I can sing. Right? That's why Chizkiyahu wasn't zochet to be Mashiach, because he didn't sing. But can you take care of business for me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. Again, I don't want to go into the Midrash, but it's clear from the Midrash that the ideal model is not Chizkiyah. One of the guys is, he's not Mashiach. Right? And when we talk about Malchus, we talk about Malchus based David. David HaMelech is the model. You have